Good morning. Welcome to the weekend edition. Barry in the hot seat for Greg today. Loads coming up on this show. We'll have plenty of music today. We're going to have Little John Nee and a band in studio. And we'll also have singer-songwriter Monday at the end of the show. He'll be performing a couple of songs as well. Both those guys are performing in County Donegal around the county tonight. We're also going to have feature writer Tanya Sweeney on the phone. We're also going to have Tommy Doolihan, who's grew his dreadlocks for 20 years. He's going to cut them now for charity. We'll also be joined by him. And I'm sure people have seen a video this week of a guy who was in Kildaff. And he was Paul Ogilvy. He was in a kayak and you could see the dolphins. They put the video underwater. It's gone viral. We're also going to be chatting to Paul in studio. So loads coming up on today's weekend edition. Okay, good morning. We'll go through the papers as first, as usual. And we'll start with the Irish Times. And on the front of the paper, this is one that's caught my eye. Who rests under Ben Bulbin? It's a North West story. Well, it's not Yeats. Papers confirm bones sent by French were not the poets. The French diplomat who was dispatched to Rockburn Cap Martin to locate the remains of William Butler Yeats 9 years ago after the poet's death reported that the task was impossible and recommended reconstituting a skeleton from bones in the local ossuary. It's not known what was put in the coffin that was welded shut in the presence of six Frenchmen on March 20th, 1948, but correspondence between French diplomats strongly suggests it was not the complete remains of W.B. Yeats, as many were led to believe. Also in the front of the Times, Ireland to take 600 extra migrants in EU initiative. The government has agreed to accept up to 600 additional Syrian and Eritrean migrants over the next 2 years as part of a European Union relocation plan to deal with the migration crisis in the Mediterranean. So 600 extra migrants coming to Ireland. Would you agree or disagree with that? I know it's quite a big thing in the UK at the minute, a lot of people against migration, but what do you think here of 600 Syrians and Eritreans coming to Ireland? Would you welcome them or would you not? Also, in the Irish Times, man with locked-in syndrome gets €10 million. A man who developed locked-in syndrome after an operation at Cork University Hospital is to receive a lump sum payment of €10 million for future care needs in final settlement of his High Court action, bringing his total settlement to €15 million. Mr Justice Michael Moriarty indicated he would award Owen Mahoney, 32-year-old, of Station Road in Blarney, County Cork, about €10 million, with the exact amount to be decided later. The judge said the figure reflects the gravity of the case and will meet Owen's future care needs. No financial award can bring back Owen and his family to a life fullness and achievement he had every reason to aspire to, which I agree with 100%. The money will never get him the life back that he once had, but at least it'll pay for his care. Also, Varadkar welcomes 2,500 new Irish citizens. Some 2,500 candidates from 112 countries gathered to receive Irish citizenship at three ceremonies in the Convention Centre in Dublin yesterday. Minister for Health Leo Varadkar, attending on behalf of the government, described his own childhood growing up in West Dublin, the son of an Indian migrant father and an Irish mother who had herself been a migrant worker in England where they met. Varadkar said, growing up in West Dublin, I was the only child in school with sallow skin and a funny surname. Mr. Varadkar said he was encouraged to now see the diverse mix of backgrounds of children in Dublin and nationally going to our Gael schools around the country. Irish Times also, Noonan rules out giveaway budget. You probably heard that on our news bulletins yesterday. The government will have more money to spend in the next budget than it will be allowed to spend under current rules, Minister for Finance Michael Noonan has said, but he has said it will not be a giveaway budget. We'll go on to the next newspaper, The Sun. Imelda and hubby split is in the front of The Sun. Imelda May and her husband have split after 13 years together. Rockabilly star Imelda May has split from her husband Daryl after 13 years of marriage. Breaking the news to fans online last night, the heartbroken mum of one announced, "We're very sad but happy we're making the right decision." That's also on page 2 and 3. I don't know, should that really be taking up so much of the papers? Also in The Sun, hospital suspend three bung claim staff. Three staff members have been suspended amid probes into allegations that workers at two hospitals accepted holidays and gifts from a medical equipment supplier, RTE's primetime programme claimed goods were purchased from Eurosurgical Limited, even though they cost 10 times more than the existing provider. It also alleged pricing lists from competitors were passed to Eurosurgical, a major breach of HSE regulations. Three separate individuals are alleged to have had holidays to Florida and Portugal paid for by Eurosurgical. So an investigation is underway. Also on page 6 and 7, I know that this story has taken up a lot of the front pages in the British tabloids and the British nationals today. The Queen, her uncle, a Nazi salute, secrets of Royal Home movie shot 82 years ago. It says it's a stunning film footage of Queen Elizabeth performing a Nazi salute is today revealed by The Sun. The clip lay hidden for 88 decades, but today we can tell how the Queen and her Nazi sympathising Uncle Edward and the Queen Mother were captured on camera making the salute. Even toddler Princess Margaret raises her arms. The grainy home movie is thought to have been shot in 1933 or 34 as Hitler rose to supreme power in Germany. The 22nd cine film reveals Edward, who once gave a Nazi salute to Hitler and claimed he was not a bad chap, larking around with his sister-in-law, the Queen Mother, and her young children in the grounds of Balmoral. The Queen in the tartan kilt or skirt is aged around 7, while Sister Margaret is 3. And if you go on to the next few pages, it says Nazis wanted Edward as king and Wallis as a good queen. The Nazis plotted for Queen Elizabeth's uncle Edward VIII to return as a puppet king in the Second World War. The operation was drawn up in the 1940s and would have seen exiled Edward restored to the throne after a German invasion. So that's in The Sun today. And as I say, it's taken up a lot of the British tabloids and it's in front of a lot of the British nationals. The Buckingham Palace have released a statement today. They've says that they're disappointed with The Sun newspaper's film, which they released from the early 1930s, showing the Queen appearing to raise her hand in a Nazi salute. Her Majesty was aged 6 or 7 and the scene beside her mum, sister and her uncle Edward, who all seemed to be doing the same. The Queen's former press secretary has told News Talk how it emerged, but he's saying that Buckingham Palace are not happy with the footage that's been released. We'll move on to the Irish Mail. Mortgage cap fuels new surge in rents. The central bank's controversial mortgage cap is fueling a new surge in rents, experts have warned. Despite growing concern and soaring rents, new figures reveal they are climbing at 10% a year in Dublin and 7% across the country. Property experts say that because fewer people can get mortgages to buy houses, more and more are looking for homes to rent, sending rates spirally. And the hike in rents is having a double impact on would-be homeowners. More expensive rents means it is harder for them to save the crucial 20% of a property's price they need for a deposit. So we're moving the way of more European countries. We're going to start moving towards more people renting. It seems that could be the way. Also, the same story, not enough houses built, that's why rents are too high. It's continuing on with the same headline with the same story. Also in the Mail, anger as claims of fraud at hospitals revealed. We were reading that out in The Sun as well. That will go on. Is there anything else in the Mail? There was one story that caught my eye. Did anybody watch the McGregor fight last week? UFC, so there's a double page here today and they're saying, is it too violent? I watched some of the UFC last week. I watched the fight before. Guy broke his nose and our guy busted his lip. It is very violent. And I know a lot of people maybe don't want to watch it. Even McGregor's fight was quite violent. But this spread, or this double page spread by journalist Jenny Freel, they've got a young guy called Nathan Kelly. He's a 10-year-old. We actually had him on the show a few months back. He is an aspiring UFC a UFC fighter. He says he wants to be a UFC professional. He's only 10 years old. He trains a couple of hours a day. We had him on the show a few months back. He's quite a character. But I suppose Jenny Freel is saying, should young children at the age of 10 be dreaming of being triumphant at elbowing, kicking and kneeing other people in the head? Should young people be doing this sport? What do you think? Is UFC too violent for young people? We'll move on to the Daily Star. Knife killer gets life. That is, Paula Farrell stabbed her victim Wayne McQuillan 4 times with a steak knife following a drunken row at her home. That's in the front page of the Daily Star. Also in the Daily Star, she's back in Vogue. Vogue Williams, a picture of Vogue Williams who split up with Brian McFadden recently. Also, Sinead O'Connor, singer O'Connor, says becoming a gran is a dream. Singer Sinead O'Connor has fulfilled her greatest dream by becoming a grandmother for the first time. The Irish rock star's son, Jake, who's 27, and his partner, Liam, welcomed a baby boy yesterday morning. More on that story, which is on the front page of the Daily Star. We can never forgive you. Victims' relatives tell of agony over vile murder. The distraught family of a man cruelly stabbed to death by his partner in a vicious New Year's Day knife attack have told this killer, we can never forgive you. Twisted Paula Farrell was sentenced to life for the murder of boyfriend Wayne McQuillan at her home in Rathmullen Park, Drogheda, on January 1st, 2014. Killer Farrell plunged a large steak knife four times into the body of her boyfriend and then left him to die as he begged her to ring the ambulance. Also in the Daily Star, anything else? Imelda and marriage split, as we've already seen. Dwyer vows to marry new girl, but she's not certain she will wed evil killer. Story about Graham Dwyer. Irish Guards, Irish GARDS is the headline. Britain's Prince William could be togging out with his army regiment's GAA team, which has been set up by its Irish soldiers. The Duke of Cambridge and Colonel of the Irish Guards in the British Army was asked by the team's organisers if he would like to join the team. The team's organising sergeant said he's colonel of our regiment and he was positive about the whole thing, so we'll see what happens. If the 33-year-old, who is the second in line to the British throne, does line out for his regiment's GAA team, it could even end up playing at Croke Park. Well, we'll see that if Prince William togs out for his GAA team. That would be a turn-off for the books, wouldn't it? Also, the Irish Daily Mirror, Imelda Payne over hubby split. We've already seen that. Also, HSE suspend payments to medical firm. We've also read through that. And then Our Family is Broken, that story we've just read. Victim's sister tells how the brutal stab killing will haunt them. She told Wayne's future and our future. Anything else? More on Imelda May, more on Brian McFadden and Vogue Williams. There's a story here in page 6 of the Irish Mirror. Dolls, extra halls, fury. Politicians take 1 week longer for summer break. Politicians are treating themselves to an extra week's holiday this year as the doll breaks for the summer. Leinster House will virtually be a ghost town for more than 2 months while the rest of us slog away, with senators and TDs not returning on September 22nd. Dublin People Before Profit councillor Breed Smith slammed the extra week off, saying it is a step too far. So it's almost 10 weeks TDs and senators are going to get for the summer. They normally get about 9 weeks. I think Fine Gael promised when they came into government that they would actually cut the summer holidays, but it seems that they've extended them by a week. Anybody listening, what do you think of that? I don't think anybody would agree with politicians getting 10 weeks holidays. And finally, the Irish Independent. The front of the Independent: property ladder misery as houses prices soar. The cost of buying a family home has rocketed across most of the country despite a marked fall in the number of properties being sold. An analysis of official selling data by the Irish Independent shows a 10% fall in houses and apartments being sold in the second quarter of the year. Yet prices have actually risen by as much as 14%. The general slowdown in the property market squeezing out normal families. The lack of properties in the market is also pushing prices up. We were also reading that earlier. Also, Graham Norton is on page 2 of the Independent. Whenever I leave Ireland, I always wish I could stay. Graham Norton has admitted his dream is to retire in his beloved West Cork, but he isn't putting any time frame on a move back from London. The BBC star said he adored his regular breaks in his native county, where he has a holiday home there. I also was reading something Graham Norton had said today. So we're reading that the BBC is coming under pressure and they're looking to cut the licence fee, whatever, or the Tory government's looking to cut the licence fee. But I heard Graham Norton saying that they should cut the BBC for 2 months and then licence fee payers would soon realise how much they would miss it. Would people miss the BBC if it was gone for 2 months? Also on page 3, McGregor triumph inspires would-be champions to head for the MMA gym. Prepare for blood, sweat and tears. Mixed martial art gyms across the country have received floods of applications for membership following Conor McGregor's title win in Las Vegas last week. Similar to the story in the Mail, should young people be joining MMA gyms? Is it good they're getting into the sport, or is MMA or UFC too violent? What do you think? Also in the In the Irish Independent, detectives in bid to trace 600 at nightclub after Tory's mystery death. We had that on Highland Radio News on Thursday. The Gardaí are issuing an appeal to find anyone who saw tragic Tory Johnson at a nightclub on the day she died. The 17-year-old collapsed and died at Letterkenny General Hospital on Wednesday morning, just hours after feeling unwell at Voodoo Nightclub. We had Inspector Pat O'Donnell on Highland on Thursday, and he is asking anyone who was in Voodoo Nightclub on that night, on Tuesday night, who may have seen Tory Johnston or may have been in contact with him, to contact Letterkenny Garda Station. Also, restaurants start to sizzle again as customers hungry to spend. After breaking 7,500 wine glasses, we thought, why not make our own? Stefan Robin, manager of restaurant Patrick Gulab, says. So they're saying restaurants are starting to get a lot busier around the country. Are they? I think they are. Suppose they are in Donegal anyway. The sterling euro rate is certainly helping. Labour did more than 50% of the work in coalition, insists Joan Burton. Labour leader Joan Burton insists that it contributed far more than 50% of the work in the coalition as frustrations grow about the party's poor showing in the polls. But she insisted her party is prepared for a battle ahead of the upcoming general election. Joan Burton says that Labour have been blamed too much for the economic crash, and they're not getting enough credit for the recovery, and Fine Gael are getting most of the credit. Of course, Joan Burton and Enda Kenny and Leo Varadkar, Micheál Martin, Mary Lou McDonald, they're all going to be in Glanthes next week for the McGill Summer School. We're going to take a break, but now before the break I'm going to take a song. We were at the Swell Festival in Armagh last weekend, and I was just saying to Yvonne there earlier, it was great, some great artists. I was there for the Saturday. Paul Tully, Jerdai Too, Our Native States, Natty Will, they were all brilliant. It's hard to pick a highlight, but for me the highlight was In Their Thousands.
Saturday's Peel McCann Show. Peel talks to Brendan Quinn, one of our great legends who has had many big hits at home, plus has also worked the country scene in America and Canada. This Saturday, Peel and Brendan Quinn from 12 midday.
Gortley Tool Hire stock all the major brands in paint and painting accessories at great prices. Visit Gortley on Facebook and see our 50 Shades of Paint video. For your next paint job, see what's on offer at Gortley Tool Hire, Letterkenny. Call 91262 76.
Ladies, there's big end-of-sale reductions in the summer sale at Latouche in Letterkenny, with up to 70% off selected sale items. Mother of the bride and groom outfits, casual wear, and much more greatly reduced at Latouche in the Courtyard Shopping Centre, Letterkenny.
A public interest message from Donegal County Council. Discover more about Donegal's traditional music scene at the Donegal County Museum. As part of the Errigal Arts Festival, the museum presents its latest exhibition, a Donegal photo album. This is an exhibition of family photographs from the collection of Alton founder member Raidney Weeney. The exhibition has been curated by the Gallery of Photography Dublin and Donegal County Museum. The Donegal County Museum is located on the High Road, Letterkenny, and admission is free. Call us on 07 74 91 24613 or find us on Facebook, Donegal County Council, serving the people of Donegal.
You're welcome back to the weekend edition. It's just approaching 10:30. Before we bring on our first guest, just a few requests to read out. Happy birthday to my lovely wife, Nori McDivitt, in Minnacreeve, Annagree. It's her 60th birthday today. Love and best wishes from your husband, Huey. And could we wish Patrick Quinlivan good luck tonight on the Miriam O'Callaghan Show, and especially for the Special Olympics in Los Angeles next week. That's from Anna Blake. But now we go to our first guest. On the show we have Rita De Bruin, who is a journalist with the Irish Examiner, on the line. Rita, good morning.
Good morning, Barry. Hiya.
Rita, you had an article in the Irish Examiner this week, "The Politics of Tears at Work, the Big No-No in the Workplace." Is crying at work, is it a big no-no?
It is for some people, but I think that's changing, but very, very slowly. What happened, the reason I wrote this piece, Barry, was because a Nobel Prize-winning scientist, Tim Hunt, at a science conference, I actually think he was trying to be kind of funny and get a few laughs, which is normal enough when you're standing in front of an audience. But he made a huge mistake, really professionally, because he said to his audience, "Let me tell you about my trouble with girls. Three things happen when they're in the lab. You fall in love with them, they fall in love with you, and when you criticize them, they cry." So his words cast a dark shadow, grew wings, became the subject of an ocean of feminist ire on social media, and led to him having to resign from his job. And it just kicked off loads and loads of talk about whether or not it's okay to cry in the workplace, and whether or not it's actually true that women cry more than men. I think what happened to that poor man is that he kind of was accused of kind of strengthening stereotypes against women in science and making things more difficult for women in the science world than they already are, and they're challenging enough for women. Doing such brilliant work there, but yeah, so that's what happened to him.
Suppose what Tim Hunt said, with the social media age, just coming out with comments like that, is a big no-no?
Yeah. But I mean, I do feel sorry for him, because, you know, it was like having to resign from his job is a pity as well. But what it did do on a positive note, I suppose, was get people talking about crying at work and whether or not it's okay. And there has been a lot of research about that, Barry, way back. You remember, you know, there's a Nickelodeon executive, and she was criticised at work by her boss. And instead of just licking her wounds, or else, you know, maybe more possibly just getting on with it, she decided to research the whole topic, and she wrote a book about it. And 41% of women she polled said they cried at work, and only 9% of men said that they did. But what that kind of leads us to the whole point of whether women cry more often than men anyway in real life, in their whole life rather than just in the workplace. And research going back to the 1980s says that women cry an average of 5.3 times a month, while men cry an average of only 1.3 times a month. And on that even more recent research than that 1980 research, they now say that females cry between 30 and 64 times a year, compared with men who apparently cry only between 6 and 17 times a year. So there's a Dutch scientist who has been doing a lot of research into crying, and he says one of the reasons why men cry far less often than women is because when they're growing up, they're made to feel by their peers that they've considered a sissy if they cry. so that they learn not to cry too much. And he also thinks that maybe testosterone may possibly inhibit crying in men. And whereas for women, he says there's a hormone, prolactin, that women have more of than men, and that might cause more crying in women. That and the fact that they watch more tearjerker movies, and that women have a female propensity for feeling helpless. Rather, men don't feel that, and women feel helpless far more often, and that it's helplessness, not sadness, that's the core reason behind crying. So that's sort of the background to this whole thing, anyway.
Does it matter, or does it depend on what job you're in, whether it would be acceptable to cry and work or not? And then suppose too, people might get some personal news while they're at work, and it might lead to them crying as well.
Absolutely and totally, very much so. I think it does. Recent research again, Barry, has shown that the vast majority of clinical psychologists and psychology trainees have cried during therapy sessions with clients. So that's kind of good, because it shows that barriers are breaking down a little bit. And I feel it would take a very kind of strange person who is working maybe in a war zone or in a hospice or in animal protection, who would never be moved to tears by what they see and what they're dealing with every day. And it is so human. I mean, after all, it's the most natural response to stress, distress, and even happiness, and even kind of newborn babies do it. But I'll tell you one thing. I think one of the reasons why there's such a taboo about it in so many places, it's, you know, in a 2005 book, a psychotherapist wrote a book, Seeing Through Tears, Crying and Attachment, and she looked at past research and said that securely attached people are more comfortable expressing emotions and cry in ways that are considered normal and healthy, while those with insecure attachment may cry inappropriately with easily activated, difficult soothe tears. So she's talking about the different types of people who cry. But researchers recently at Tilburg University have found that people with a dismissive attachment styles, or those who tend to avoid close relationships with others, were less likely to cry and tried harder to inhibit their tears than people with other attachment styles. So I think people kind of are categorising and kind of labelling people about who's a crier and who's not, and what it says about you, whereas really it seems to be just a very natural thing, a very natural emotion. And one who kind of says that all the time is Sheryl Sandberg, the Facebook CEO, who kind of is very much vocal about the fact that we don't have a professional, or we shouldn't have a professional self from Monday to Friday. We're just people 7 days a week. And she herself has kind of admitted to crying at work, even in front of Mark Zuckerberg. And she says that sharing emotions builds deeper relationships, and she doesn't believe that we have to try to pretend to be stony-faced no matter what. And as you say, if something awful happens at home, or, you know, you're just, you know, stressed out at work or something like that. But on that note, Barry, apparently it is, from research, it is apparently difficulties in personal life spilling out into the workplace that actually generally cause tears, more so than just stress or intimidation or frustration in the workplace itself. It's normally, you know, home difficulties or personal life difficulties just spilling out in work.
And people might find it hard to separate the two as well.
Of course they do. We're just people, you know, the way. And I think a lot of the time, the people who have cried at work have said that it happens as well, when they're able to hold it together. They're trying to hold it together because they feel it might be deemed unprofessional. And then somebody might kind of empathise with them or say, are you okay? You know, in a genuinely, you know, sincere way. And that just makes them kind of tear up a little bit, because they're not okay and they're just trying to hold it in. But the fact that somebody actually acknowledges their hurt, or they can feel their sensitivity, you know, that's a nice thing as well. So yeah, I think the sooner the kind of barriers break down, the better for everybody, really, I suppose.
Is there any evidence of people using tears, crocodile tears, to maybe gain advantage at work?
I don't know. You tell me. I don't know. It's hard to know, isn't it? I mean, you know, and some people say that, you know, yeah, that people might try to do that because it shows vulnerability. And maybe if somebody's kind of considered to be a real kind of tough-ass person or something like that, to show a little bit of vulnerability is a nice thing, but you wouldn't like to think that people would be so kind of strategic. She wouldn't.
Well, no, you wouldn't like to think it, but you would never know.
No, you wouldn't.
I suppose, what about yourself, Rita? Have you ever shed a tear in work?
I did, actually, but not bawling. I did tear up one time, I remember, only once, and it was just like a difficult time, but I never sat kind of bawling at the desk or anything like that. Having said all that, I have seen very many women crying at work, and only ever felt empathy for them. And I actually genuinely felt that the feeling, the general feeling towards people who cry at work, is empathy, not not kind of ridicule or thinking, oh, you're unprofessional or anything like that. I think people empathise. Everybody at the end of the day is just trying to do a good job, trying to hold it together under all sorts of difficult pressures, you know, personal, professional, everything else. And I think it's kind of crazy to feel that people, you know, would kind of judge you badly. But I mean, experts have given their advice on what to do if you are, say, in a work situation, maybe in a one-to-one heated conversation with somebody who's, you know, it's going very you're finding it very hard and you do cry. Well, the advice from the professionals is, you know, try and continue with the conversation if you can, despite the tears. And whatever you do, the big no-no there is do not apologise for crying. Absolutely do not. If you can continue on, even though you're showing emotion by crying, continue on. If you can't, if it gets too much for you, apparently the experts say what you should do is say, okay, I don't want to continue this conversation now, but I will let you know when I want to.
So there's a lot of people want to shed a tear in work too. A lot of the work colleagues will be their friends. So it's, you know, if there is something personal going on or if someone does get stressed out, I'm sure they'll be there to comfort them or to empathise with them.
You'd hope so. But here's another interesting thing as well. They're talking about the therapeutic value of crying, Barry. And again, the scientists with the white coats have been looking and they've been actually analysing the content of tears, of crying. And apparently the tears you cry when you're peeling onions are different in content to the tears you cry when you're expressing emotion. The latter would have more protein in them. So apparently this difference, they think, indicates that, you know, when you're crying for emotional reasons or to release, you know, or to express sadness or release stress or whatever you do, that actually has a therapeutic you know, link there. And that's why people shouldn't be ashamed of it or trying to pretend it doesn't happen, because we're normal, we're human and everything like that.
And just when you say that, there's absolutely nothing scientists don't research these days, is there?
exactly, yeah.
Research
exactly.
Everything. But that's all we have time for, Rita. But thanks for joining us on the show. It's pretty
Thank
interesting.
You so much.
I'm sure some of our listeners will text in with an opinion on that. Rita De Bruin, journalist with the Irish Examiner. Thanks for joining us on the show.
A joy talking to you. Thanks, Mel. Bye.
We're going to take another break now. We'll be back after these. Welcome back to the show. Just one of the messages coming in. I watched one of the UFC fights on Tuesday night, not the McGregor one, the one before it, and I thought it was so cruel. One of the fighters was bleeding. It looked like he had a broken nose. The other fighter was covered in blood as well as himself, and the ring was covered in blood. Two of them kicking and punching, especially their heads. I don't like UFC at all. That's just the message in. Suppose that's from the papers. They're talking about an increase in 8, 9, 10-year-olds joining MMA gyms around the country, and suppose the papers are asking today, should young people get involved in such a violent sport? It's just approaching 10:45. Our next guest has joined us now in the studio. It is Paul Ogilvie. Paul, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Now, Paul, a video of yourself kayaking in Kildaff. When was it? Was it last week or a couple of weeks ago? Just Monday past. And I seen a few people. I think the first person I seen share the video on Twitter was Barra Best, the weatherman on BBC. So you put the camera underwater and you could see a pod of dolphins.
Yeah, initially I thought I seen a fin swimming alongside a boat coming into the harbour. And then they started jumping clear out of the water behind it. So I took the kayak out and they were constantly swimming around the kayak, and then at times they went only a matter of inches beneath the boat. So I just put the camera under the water, and lucky enough I got some good shots.
So you were just going out kayaking, you weren't purposely going out looking for dolphins in Monday?
Not purposely going out looking for them, but when the dolphins showed, then that's the reason I took it out. I was going to go fishing off it anyway. So
yeah, and is this the first time you've seen dolphins? Do you kayak around the coast in general?
Yeah, I kayak around Kildaff a lot, mainly in the summer months, and I've seen dolphins in there lots of times before, but just never in such abundance and never so close to the shore.
And how close were you?
They were only at times 30 yards from the shore, and the day before maybe only 20 yards.
And when you were in the kayak, how close did they get to you?
Right beneath the kayak. I could have touched them if I wanted to.
Yeah, it's amazing. And suppose, is this kind of giving you a hunger now to go looking for them more?
I went down the day after in the hope to find them again, but unfortunately lightning doesn't strike three times.
So where's the best places to kayak, just from a kayaking perspective?
Well, I'm not an avid kayaker, I'm more into my surfing.
Yeah.
But kayaking, I enjoy doing it around Kildaff, just because my family's been going there for decades. We used to have a caravan down there as well. So we know the area pretty well.
It could be a real tourist attraction, people seeing these dolphins, because it would bring people want to see that.
Yeah, I've sent it to the Irish Whale and Dolphin Group, and pretty much everybody I can think of as well. They try and get some attention.
I know a lot of people, I've seen a lot of people sharing the video. It's been all of UTV, BBC, it's been all over the place, so it's a huge interest in it. Dolphins, as I say, it could be a huge tourist attraction, and do you think it could bring more people kayaking to Kildare now, that video?
I hope it wouldn't. I can't see why not, because there's been so much attention to it. It shows that there's a lot of people out there that are interested, and they're not really aware of the abundance of wildlife that we have around our coasts.
Yeah.
You don't need to go to Florida to see dolphins or whales or anything like that. They're right on our doorstep if you're just lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time.
And you can get as close to them as you did as well.
Yeah.
I've seen pictures of people up around Malin Head and places like that. There's lots of dolphins up around there. And you were saying you were in Port Stewart there during the week as well?
No, I wasn't in Port Stewart. I heard that the pod of dolphins were in Port Stewart.
So they were up there as well. So they must be all around the north coast. Anybody who hasn't seen the video, where can they see it?
On the BBC Newsline Facebook page. And I have a Vimeo account and a YouTube account, which I've uploaded all our underwater videos and snorkeling videos under my own name.
Yeah, so anybody wants to see them, they can get them there online. And this could be the first of many videos, is it?
Hopefully, I've been looking to do this as a career in conservation for a long time, as far as I can remember.
It's a good start, anyway. All right, Paul, thanks for coming in, anyway.
No problem, thanks very much. We fell in love right by the ocean, made all our plans down on the sand, and from the tip of your fingers down to the soles of your feet, a glimmer in your skin that I can't believe, and take a trip to the sea, let your hair we
coast ocean there. Before we take a break, we do have a competition on the show today. On this week's show, courtesy of the Errigal Arts Festival, we're giving you the chance to win a family room overnight stay on the 22nd of July in the Station House Hotel in Letterkenny, and also four tickets to The Elves and the Shoemaker on the 22nd of July in the Angrenan Theatre in Letterkenny. To be in with the chance of winning this fantastic prize, simply answer this question. In the fairy tale Cinderella, how many ugly sisters did she have? Is it A, 2, or B, 4? Text HI plus your answer, name and address to 53131. That's 53131. Or from the north to 84555. That's 84555. Text cost 30 cents or the sterling equivalent plus your operator's charge. We're going to take a break now, but coming up after the break, we're going to have some music in the studio with Little John Nee and the Highly Strung Orchestra. Okay, welcome back to the weekend edition. Before we go to news at 11, we've got very special guests in. We've got Little John Nee and the Highly Strung Orchestra. Guys, thanks for coming into the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, first, before we get used to play a tune, you're playing tonight in the Angrenan.
That's right, yeah.
Just a few tickets left.
Yeah, it's selling well, I think.
Selling good, yeah.
So anybody who wants to get a ticket, they need to get them fast because it's selling out.
Yeah, because they'll be fighting and everything for people outside trying to get tickets.
And I was just reading, you were in Napoli recently.
We were in Napoli recently, yep, where we signed a distribution deal with Agualoca Records, and we done a show in the Porta Petrao Art Centre, so we had a brilliant time.
Yeah, and Napoli, now you're back in Letterkenny. Napoli, Letterkenny, not much difference there.
No. And we've got a whole section of the show about that journey.
Yeah.
From Remelton to Napoli.
There you go.
Down the Irish Sea and up the Mediterranean.
Yeah, and I suppose, John, you've got this, is it a cigar box guitar, they call that?
I've got a cigar box. For this one, I'm using ukulele.
Ukulele. This is what you're famous for as well, isn't it?
Playing the ukulele badly.
You're going to play a song anyway first, and this is what anybody wants to see these guys tonight, this is what they've got in store. So take it away.
Dead Rose, da, dead Rose, da. You don't come right like you. You don't come round here anymore. Rooster, dead rooster. You don't come round like you used to. Dead rooster, dead rooster. You don't come round here anymore. And so it is, I travel the country, from the top giant to the bottom, from the shimmering shores of Inishowen to the swelling surf of Venice Garonne. The Kelly Halls of Kerry, the street corners of Cork, from Ballymoney, Ballymena to Bally James Duff. I linger in Clare, cause there's some rare flowers there. I swing up around Galway Bay. I recuperate in Tuam, then I resume. It's sweet to be in Letterkenny today. Dead rooster, dead rooster. You don't come around like you used to. Dead rooster, dead rooster. You don't come around here anymore. Dead rooster, dead rooster. You don't come round like you used to. Dead rooster, dead rooster. You don't come round here anymore. Dead rooster,
You don't come round here anymore.
I'd say those last few tickets might sell out pretty quickly after that. Thanks for coming.
That sounds acoustic. See, when we're plugged in, we're totally mad altogether.
Yeah. And tonight, and Greening, 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
8 o'clock. So a few tickets left. And someone's texting here, John. Could you ask John, where could I get a copy of The Derry Boat?
The play?
Yeah.
If they send me a message through my website, and possibly on Green and Theatre as well. They published a book of the Derry Boat play, so they could get it.
Yeah, they're looking for a copy of the Derry Boat. Great show, this says. So
yeah, oh great.
That's for someone texting. Guys, good luck with the show tonight. Great, that was very good. I'm sure a lot of people will be looking forward to it.
Stories and excitement and comedy and we'll probably be fighting with each other and things like that as well, like fist fighting on stage and arm wrestling and all sorts of things like that.
Right, yeah. I might go myself. Thanks for coming in, guys. So we'll take a break before we go to the news.